football.
Hey, we're going to get back to the show in just a second, but a quick shout out to Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated is here to help business owners, and they've been helping business owners in the state of Minnesota for over 100 years during pandemic periods and non-pandemic periods. It really just helps tremendously to have an insurance company that gives you peace of mind as you navigate the challenges of running a business. When you partner with Federated, you get more than just a policy. You benefit from over a century of experience in making businesses as successful as they can be. Visit federatedinsurance.com to find your local representative. And remember, at Federated Mutual Insurance Company, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Join more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and scorenorth.com.
You can see if you are watching us right now. Phil is out this week, and so instead of doing Conduit to Trouble, we are going to morph Conduit to Trouble into a Mackie and Judd episode. So it's Zolgad, it's Declan Goff, as always, producing, and then our buddy Chip Scoggins, Star Tribune sports columnist, joining us now. Chipper, what's up? How are things going? Good Christmas?
Yeah, great Christmas. Everything is good. Minnesota sports are...
There's never a lack of things to talk about, Chip Scoggins.
It is, it's never dull here, that's for sure.
Yeah, and in fact, on Score North right now, we are in the process of me, Declan, and Brian Murphy are going through a play-by-play, a series, I think it's what Dex, four or five parts.
Yep.
Of the 2010 Vikings season. And if you ever, Chip, if you ever think things are bad now,
I urge you
to go back to Score North and listen to that and recall what we went through and realize it ain't nothing compared to the 2010 trials and tribulations that essentially included everything that can go wrong for a team going wrong.
Judd, I still wake up in the middle of the night in cold sweat sometimes thinking about the thing that went on. Seriously, me and you should go in and write a book on that season, because it. I would venture to guess that there will not be another NFL season as eventful as that one. I mean, Washington is trying, right?
Well, and everybody tries. Like there have been a lot of attempts to replicate. I just don't think that you can get to the point of chaos where your roof collapses, because most teams don't have roofs, you know. Yeah.
I would say the Washington football team is, but there's this sort of a one story, drama with the ownership. Right now, you have the quarterback now with Haskins, but mostly it's just been ownership and the issues there. The 2010 Vikings was a little bit of everything, and like literally everything.
Yes.
And so there needs to be a book written. So I think me and you should go in and write the book.
I think the difference is in Washington, for instance, Daniel Snyder's causing his problems.
Yes.
And he's doing that. The Vikings basically had things go wrong that you never saw coming. Like if I had told you 3 years back, Daniel Snyder's going to have problems, you'd be like, of course he is. Look at him. Yeah. But the 2010 Vikings, like, you had everything, and a lot of it was unpredictable completely.
Like some
of the Favre stuff, I guess, sort of might have been. But yeah, so scorenorth.com, Murph, me, Dex, talking about the 2010 debacle that was the Vikings season. All right. Good Christmas for you. I'm glad to hear it. Good Christmas for me. Good Christmas for Dex. Not such a good Christmas for Mike Zimmer. Your thoughts on what we saw, which was defensively really as bad as it can probably get. I don't think it can get much worse than that.
No, that felt like Leslie Frazier's last year to me defensively. Mm-hmm. Where I'm pretty sure that year, that was what, 13 was his last year.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure they were dead last in NFL and total defense, scoring defense. It was just, you know, they gave up all the blown leads and collapses there at the end. This just felt like that, and unlike anything we've really seen from a Zimmer team, where they haven't always played well, but you feel like, defensively they're going to be at least competent. this yes. is, and I don't know, and I know Zimmer's putting it all on personnel, and it is a big part of it, Judd. I mean, we can't ignore that. I mean, obviously, they're playing guys that should not be playing, that should be backups at best. But, you know, I don't know if it's as simple as, well, let's get Barr back, let's get Danielle Hunter back, let's get Michael Pierce back, and we're going to be back, be a top five defense, because I think that's too easy. I think that's too convenient to do that. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, Judd, they reconfigured the defense before this year. I think they're going to have to do it again this offseason. Not to the level, but, yeah. but I think Barr's gone. I think Anthony Harris is gone. I think you need another defense, maybe two starting defensive linemen.
Safety.
Who's your quarterback? Or who's your linebacker?
Yeah.
Are you going to be able to sign Wilson? So, I mean, I think you could see another four or five new starters next year on this defense.
Yeah, so here, Chip, is the starting point of what I didn't like about what Mike said on Friday after the loss. And he walked it back, I think, yesterday in his comments a bit. If you look through, and I understand that these were primarily, or not primarily, I understand that there were a lot of backups here, all right? But what I didn't like about what he did on Friday was he basically said, it's embarrassing, it's the worst defense I've had. Okay, that's all true, that's fine. But then he came back with, and I don't have my guys. Go back and look at the guys who started on Friday. Those are largely his guys. They're drafted. They're signed. I think I found about two guys who I would say, okay, yeah, those were guys who had to play. Chris Jones and then Lynch, yeah. who started, I believe, at linebacker.
Linebacker, yeah. So
there were two guys who I think we could characterize as street free agent guys. But besides that, that defensive line, those interior tackles are his guys. Shamar mm-hmm. Stephan was drafted by him, left here, and he brought him back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chip Jahlil Johnson was drafted by this franchise in 2017. He has yeah. been here. Like, there is no excuse for him. If he's this bad, he shouldn't be here still. So it frustrated me a little bit that I felt that Mike, you know, Mike said, yeah, it's terrible, embarrassing, my worst defense, and then pivoted to, but they're not my guys. When I would say, Mike, they are your guys. They're just not very good.
They are your guys, and Anthony Harris is your guy.
Yeah.
And he might have been the worst player on the field, defender on the field Sunday. And so, that was your guy. And here's the thing. This secondary, what did we scream about in the offseason? Bring in some veterans. They chose to go this path. They chose to say, we're just going to trust these rookies and let them. So this was your plan. Now, it wasn't your plan for Pierce to opt out and Barr to get hurt and Danielle Hunter to get hurt. And I get that, and that's out of their control. But some of the other stuff is not out of your control. These are your guys. You're right. And you chose to go with the young cornerbacks. And so I think it's a little bit too scapegoating to just say, these aren't my guys. My guys will be back next year and we'll be better. Hey, we don't know. Like, what kind of shape is Pierce going to come back in, Judd?
Yeah.
And is Danielle Hunter going to be Danielle Hunter?
And if he really comes back, Chip, in the spring, and his representatives go to the Vikings and say he needs to be the highest paid defensive player, I can tell you flat out right now, with the cap coming down, the Vikings can't do that.
No. And
they can't do it. Well, it's not feasible, I don't think.
And here's the other thing, Judd. How hard is Zimmer going to go to bat for to keep Barr?
You
can't do it. You can't do it.
You've got to tell Mike he's gone.
$15 million.
But Chip, what Hunter, if Hunter's truly going to ask for what was leaked out, that is starting quarterback money. And the Vikings don't have that.
Yeah.
Like, and the cap, if the cap comes down to, let's say, 190, 180, they really don't. And so yeah, this whole notion that everyone is coming back is simply not true.
Well, and the other thing is, okay, guys come back, but they're older. Harrison Smith. You know, there's going to be a decline, and I think we're probably seeing a decline or maybe just, you know, a rough stretch for him. But these guys are not going to stay stagnant. They're not going to stay the guys they were when they were 25, 26, 27. I mean, they're going to get older, and there's going to be a decline. And so
yep.
you have to factor. It's it's some of the same things that they thought where they could just kind of keep running Xavier back out there and that older crew and thinking it's going to be the same results. And so going back to Hunter Judd, yes, he is one of the premier players, but his side also has to realize, hey, man, you're coming off a serious injury that knocked you out the whole year. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be paid at the highest. You're not going to be the highest paid defensive player in the league coming off an injured year where you don't play, I don't think. I mean, maybe the Vikings acquiesce some, but I don't know if Hunter has the ultimate leverage in that situation. Now, if he come off another Pro Bowl year and one of the best, then you could say, okay, maybe, you know, he has the ultimate. But when you've missed the whole year and you have this injury,
yeah,
I think there has to be some give and take on his side too.
The problem to me is this. If you're him and you now know that your side got completely destroyed basically in the last contract negotiations by yes. the Vikings, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you're him, do you come back, though, off a neck problem to prove yourself, possibly get hurt again, and now you're done? Like, now you're in huge trouble. Or do you say, look, I know that you want me to prove myself, but I'm not going to prove myself on this contract, because if I'm good and I get hurt, I'm really still screwed. So I can see it both ways, but I can see with the cap coming down that – the Vikings, I don't think, can just say, okay, cool. Like, no. Yeah, we'll, I mean, you're paying Kirk, you're paying Dalvin, you're paying a lot of guys now, and you're going to be up against it. And so I think it's going to be a really interesting standoff, because I can see this from the Vikings side and the Hunter side of why it's going to be difficult for either of them to agree that it's best to go in the other's direction, if that makes sense.
So how much do we think that cap is going to come down? What's the projection?
The most it could come down to is from 198 to 175. I'm guessing it's going to go to 190-ish. I'm guessing it's not going to come down as much
so
as we thought.
So maybe 10 million.
Yeah.
Let's
say 10 million.
Yeah. And so, but I have to think. Under that scenario, and just everything you have to do, I think Barr's gone. I think Riley Reiff's gone. I think Kyle Rudolph's gone. I think Anthony Harris is gone. Those are mm-hmm. four pretty big contracts right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to be able to clear some space there. You know, you're going to see, I assume some veterans are going to have to take some pay cuts, you know. But I think those are four pretty big contracts that you're going to see come off the books, don't you?
Yes, I've got a problem for you, though. Speaking of necks, Mike Hughes,
I think he
back-to-back neck problems. So we don't know there.
I think he's
mean. Okay. If that's the case, Chip, who is your third corner who's going to have to play a lot? And if he's not on the roster, I would think presumably he's going to have to be paid.
Yes.
Gladney, Dantzler,
and starters. Yeah.
But I'm saying Gladney starts. Dantzler starts. If Mike Hughes is done, can't come back and play, who replaces him?
Well, that's where you you have to go out and sign somebody, or I don't think you want to draft another corner first round.
No, but, I don't want another. No, no, you can't want that.
But you know, maybe that would be his fourth year, Hughes.
Yes. Yeah, I think he'd be going into year four, and I think that it's the decision on the fifth year option is in, if I'm not mistaken, this coming June.
Yeah, well, they're not going to pick up that, obviously. No. You know, I mean, you bring him back as your third or fourth guy. I mean,
I'm just saying, Chip. As far as available cash,
yeah.
I think you're going to have to pay. I think there's a good chance here that you're going to have to pay a veteran to come in to be that third corner, which essentially in today's game is a starter.
Yeah. I think you're going to have to spend money there, and forget the offensive side, which they can't. But, Judd, I think you need some defensive line help. Even if you get Hunter and Pierce back, I think they're going to need another defensive lineman.
Three technique.
Yeah.
Right?
And here's the other thing. Has Wilson priced himself out of returning?
Well, I think in the conversation to tell Zimmer that Barr is gone, it's very simple. Eric Wilson's not coming back if Barr is retained.
No.
Because he's not a starter then, and he should start.
And it's either or. And to me, that's the thing is, like, you can get Eric Wilson for cheaper than you can get Anthony Barr's like at $15 million, right? So I don't think Wilson's going to set the bar or anything like that. I mean, I think he's going to get a nice pay bump, but I don't think he's going to be one of the highest paid linebackers or any stretch like that. And so you can probably get him on a reasonable deal, and then you go that way. And then I think he would probably want to stay put, I would guess. But you never know. Some team out there might think, hey, let's spin big on him. I don't know.
And what do you do at left guard?
Well,
Dakota Dozier has as much chance of starting in 2021, I would hope, at left guard as Chip Scoggins does.
And here's the thing, Judd. I think Riley Reiss had a good year, but I think just at his age and price, and you worry about the decline, I would guess that he's already taken one pay cut. Don't you think they probably move on from him? So you move Cleveland there. Assuming you think he can handle it, you know, but I think that's the plan, right? Move Ezra Cleveland to left guard, left tackle. I think you need a left guard, a center, and a right guard.
Whoa, you're bailing on Bradbury?
I'm close.
That's a major bail. Chad, I mean, that's a first-round pick 2 years ago, man.
Chad, look at his pass blocking.
Yeah, I know.
Now, I think he is a good run blocker, and I think he fits what they do with his athleticism and getting out and doing other things. But too many times, I mean, he just gets pushed right back into Cousins. So maybe you don't bail on him, but I would say I'm nervous. I would be apprehensive about trusting him, because I think there's just protection problems with him. But at a minimum, I think you need two new starters on the line.
Yeah, the guards definitely have to.
The two guards.
Why they ever thought, and I don't get this one, why they believed that Dakota Dozier could start there? Because they saw him play some in 2019, Chip. So this was not like, we signed him and we thought he was good. That's the Vikings' hubris when trying to build a line. That's what I don't get. Like, whatever made you in when you sat down and talked about the 2020 season after last year, whatever made you say, you know, who could start at left guard? Dakota Dozier. He shouldn't have been. He's a backup. Yeah. At best, he is. That's it.
Well, and I think they thought Drew Samia was going to be an option too.
And yeah, you're probably right.
So Judd, I think you're looking at first or second round, you have to take a guard, right? And then you probably have to spend on a veteran and you know, but not a guy that you're finding off the street and just the guy who's average, at, you know, and he got released because he's not very good.
And not for this quarterback.
No.
Like, this quarterback needs this. He needs protection.
Yeah.
He's not Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson. This guy needs that. That's the thing. I would love to go back and hear when the Vikings originally sat down to discuss Kirk, right?
Yeah.
And it was Spielman and I'm sure the offensive staff and Zim. I'd love to hear the conversation about, you know what, we're going to sign him. You know, he's our guy. We're going to sign him to this huge contract. But do we really need a good line? I mean, I'm sure that they watched his games, right? What would have made you watch his games in Washington, Chip, and come away saying, you know what, let's sort of just piecemeal guard and see if that works?
Because
in Kirk's defense, it wasn't fair to Kirk.
I know. And it's, you know, I've been thinking about this week, Judd. This offense, you have Dalvin's, 1,500 yards rushing? What's he at? Kirk has had statistically, he's over 30 touchdowns, right? I don't know what his interception total is. He had
He had 10 of the five, but I think he's at 13 now or something like that.
So over 30, his passing yards. Where do they rank? Declan's probably looking up in the NFL and scoring.
Yeah, he's got 3,800 yards right now. So he'll probably finish with 4,000.
Yeah, and as in scoring offense. But if you were to, at what percentage would you say that you feel like this offense functions at?
Oh,
you're going to have a rookie of the year, wide receiver.
Yeah.
I
would say when it matters most, about 35%.
I know it's
very low.
Like, this offense has put up some impressive numbers. What was this? Yes. What was the thing that ESPN stats had last week where only the 19th that's had a 1,500 yard rusher and a quarterback in history?
What's the term, Chip? Counting stats? They put up good counting stats.
It's But there's frustration with this. Like, what? Well,
it's because they operate like they're 90-year-old men on the road when it matters most. You know, driving. It's like, okay, we'll drive nice. It's like you're in the 4-minute offense, Coobs and yeah. Kirk. And I think what I think the tipping point to what you're saying is very simple. I think the tipping point in this entire conversation is Justin Jefferson, because he's so damn good and so damn skilled. And you can't believe sometimes that he's just sort of, hey, he's part of the puzzle. No, he's not. He's the centerpiece of the puzzle.
Well, I think it is that. I think it's a couple things. One, in the critical moments, the 2 minutes, they just look discombobulated, like they've never practiced it and like they don't have a plan. And I think it's just the reliance on Dalvin to bail their butts out all the time. Second 15, hand it to Dalvin. You know, 3rd and 9, hand it to Dalvin. And there are times when he'll get it. And you hear the commentators on TV like, that's all you got to do. Just hand it to Dalvin. He'll get the yards.
Yeah.
And it's like, there has to be more drawn out of this offense. Yeah. But in saying that, it's like, they have really good stats, but it feels like there's this frustration that it's not maximized what it could be.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. Dalvin is the training wheels on your kid's bike when you realize, hey, you know what? Take them off. My kid can balance now. And the kid's like, oh, no, training wheels stay on, daddy. I got to have those training wheels. It's like, no, you really don't. But Chip, this goes back to why I told you before they paid Cook that I had reservations about it, because I always said he's a fantastic player. I mean, he is a great player. This was never about him. This is about how they structure things and think about things. And it's almost as if by paying Cook that in Mike's mind, post bye week, especially Chip, that they're justified in how they do things. And everything that you're saying not only makes sense, I think it's 100% true. So this was never from my point, it was never saying that Cook is not good. He's great. But like the way that they go about using him is maddening, because one, it's damn near abusive to the player. Yeah. And two, it doesn't maximize, like you can't pay Kirk what you're paying Kirk and run the offense like this.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
But how much is the postmortem of this season going to be? Well, heck, if they had even just an average or mediocre defense, they'd be a playoff team for sure. You know that's going to happen, Judd. Yeah. And they're going to look at the offense as like, hey, Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, we got the rookie of the year.
I wrote that exact thing. And
oh, you did? I'm sorry. sorry to steal your material.
No. But Spielman and Zim are going to tell the Wolves exactly that. They're going to say, look at these stats. Look at Jefferson, Thielen, Cook, Cousins.
Cousins.
Yeah. With a few tweaks probably to the line, Irv Smith. With a few
Conklin tweaks. Is going to be a good player.
So they're going to convince them that, hey, offensively, we're fine. I would argue that your personnel is fine. I would argue your philosophy is flawed.
That's where I wonder, like when Zimmer and Kubiak sit down and they start dissecting this season, do you think they'll come to realizations like, hey, we need to modernize this more? We can't just be Dalvin, and then, you know, occasional Jefferson, which is not even occasional. That's not fair, because he's caught a lot of passes and done a lot of good. So it's not occasional, but it's just
timing, though. It's timing. First half, he's disappeared and for no reason.
Their comeback's going to be like, well, we have the rookie of the year. And what do you mean? Look at what he's done. He's put up historic numbers. What more do you want?
So here's the problem.
So I feel like it's arguing. I don't know how to articulate, because they're gonna look at stats as like, well, Dalvin had a career year, Jefferson had historic numbers, Randy Moss numbers. What more do you want? Mm-hmm. But it just feels like it just feels like it's not operating at what it could be.
Because you're watching, and I am too, and so is Declan. We're watching offenses that operate in 2020, and the Vikings don't. Yeah. That's why. Like, if this was 1994, this is great. Like, this is optimal. Yeah. But it's 2020, and you've got mobile quarterbacks, and you've got the Chiefs doing all of this stuff. And I'm not saying that the Vikings can. They can't. But could they skew towards that? Absolutely. And after they won one of their first six games coming out of the bye, Chip. The head coach basically took the offense and said, yeah, we're going to run.
Yeah.
And that's their identity. I think it comes down to this in its simplest form. In 2020, if I was to ask you, give me one name, identity of the Vikings offense, you would write down Dalvin Cook. Yeah. That's a problem. Like, if you know football, that's a problem. It can't be a running. I don't care if it's a modern day Earl Campbell, Walter Payton, Gale Sayers. In 2020, going into 21, you can't write down a running back's name as the identity of your offense and be comfortable with what you just did.
Yeah, I guess them and Titans are probably the two teams where you only do that with, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you say Titans, what's their offense? You're going to say Derrick Henry, probably, right?
I mean, even though I feel like they trust Tannehill more than Zimmer trusts Cousins. Don't you?
Probably, without watching every Titans game and knowing what Tannehill's stats are. But yes, because I think they have good receivers too. You know, I mean, they have some dynamic playmakers too. Which, you know, I'm curious to see in retrospect to hear Kubiak and Zimmer, if they say, I assume Kubiak's back next year as the offense coordinator, right? He's not going to get rid of him.
I got a gut feeling that no, he won't fire him. I got a gut feeling Kubes might walk away from this.
You think?
He's an older guy who came here to be an advisor and got thrust into a job that Kubes has had, you know, health problems going back to his time with the Texans.
Well, okay.
I'm not going to be absolutely shocked if Kubes says, you know what? I didn't really sign up to do this job.
Yeah.
I got a lot of cash. I've got a farm in Colorado. I'm going to go home now.
And that's like that you wouldn't know. Like, I mean, that's not like Zimmer saying we need a fundamental change here. That's just a guy saying a lifestyle thing. Yeah. I mean, do you think Zimmer's like, yep, this is exactly what office
this is. Don't you?
Mission accomplished.
But don't you think that? I think post bye week, he took control. Hey, look.
Probably, Judd.
Post Falcons game, they bailed on Kirk. In my opinion, they bailed on Kirk.
Yeah. Well, they said it's going to be, we're going to ride Dalvin as far as he'll take us.
Yeah.
But then you saw Jefferson, and I think they did realize, whoa, now, wait a second. And so I think they did start giving him opportunities a lot more than we saw early on, obviously.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe this is exactly, you know, in Zimmer's mind, he might be thinking, offense is good, we're good there. I got to fix the defense. And I got to get personnel back, and we're back in business. I think that's too convenient, Judd.
Which means that Mike is, I'm sure, on the warpath already saying, high draft picks, got to be defense. The high draft picks got to be defense. He is going to, I can almost guarantee you, he is going to identify the best three technique possible. He's going to tell Rick, that needs to be our pick. And now, I don't know if Rick will do it, but I think that's what he's going to tell Rick.
Rick Barry said we need a left guard or an offense guard. And you can get your three technique in the third round or the fourth round.
I'm just telling you that I think the way that you put together how these conversations are going to go is 100% right. And all of this leads down to, let's run this back. Let's try and improve, you know, my defense, because that's my baby. And I was embarrassed. So for folks who when this team was going into the bye with one win, said, hey, they're going to draft a quarterback, they're going to, you know, get a high draft pick, that's all gone. I think this team is very clearly going to come back with most of the same personnel in 2021 and say, there's no reason why we can't win the North. And there's no reason why that we can't compete in the conference, which, by the way, in 2020 absolutely stinks.
Yeah.
The conference is awful.
The NFC is awful. Yeah. So let's assume they win Sunday, which, you know, even if Dalvin doesn't play, I think Kirk will probably play. I would be surprised if Dalvin plays, or maybe they hold out Jefferson but 8-8, where does that, what's that put them, you know, drafting 13, 14, 15, something like that?
7-9, right? If they win.
Or 7-9. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. I think right now, I think they're drafting 13th right now. If they win on Sunday, which they might accidentally do because Detroit doesn't care, I think they'd probably be around, what, 15th or so?
Yeah. So that is that.
Not a great pick.
That doesn't put you in the ballpark for a quarterback.
Depends on who. Yeah, probably not. Probably not. Because I think that Lawrence is gone for sure. First pick to Jacksonville. Nice job, Jets. Yeah.
How would you like to be the Jets fan?
Hurts is gone probably.
You make it all the way to like week 13. Thinking you're getting Trevor Lawrence. It's just like, oh my God.
You are idiots. You are beyond help. So Hurts is gone. I think with his bowl game performance, Zach Wilson probably drove his value up as well.
That would be my guess. I think he's a top 10 kid.
Yep, probably. I do too. So yeah, probably. But I mean, the Vikings are, I'm very certain now the Vikings are going to say, we got Kirk. We're fine. All your points about the offensive, production this season. I think they're going to point to all those things and say, you know what? We just need tweaks. If we have tweaks and our guys back, they're going to justify between, you know, no OTAs, no camps in June, mm-hmm. no nothing, the pandemic. They're going to justify why 2020 was disappointing. And they are going to say, we'll be fine if we just insert, you know, this guy at the three tech, this guy at left guard. I think you're right.
Yeah, it's because they're gonna sell it like, you know, Hunter back and Pierce. And Pierce is like, we have no idea what kind of player he's going to be. I mean, you know, when you take a year off of competition, Judd, there's no guarantee you just pick back up and you're the same player. I mean,
I hope he can stop the run. I hope he can stop the run because right now they got no one that can stop that.
No,
that was pathetic against Alvin Kamara.
Yeah, defensive line, they just kind of gotten eaten up a lot this year. Up the middle, and so they need big interior help there for sure.
So last point offensively, do you know what the true telltale sign for what you're saying, Chip, about this offense being, it's productive, but not being where it should be? The telltale sign, I thought last night watching Diggs destroy the Patriots post game, did you see how happy Stephon Diggs is now. Yeah. I mean, this is what he wanted. He wanted a quarterback who I don't think it was personal with Kirk as far as despising Kirk. I just don't think he really bought into Kirk. He clearly does to Kyle. But I just, in seeing how happy Diggs is in this offense with the Bills, this is what he wanted. And it's so interesting to watch him now because he probably in that vein was not wrong. Like, I think the way he went about things was probably destructive, but what he was ultimately saying and probably tried to articulate behind the scenes to Zimmer and the offensive staff and Spielman, we're seeing it now. And you know what? Damn it, he was right.
And you do wonder if that grumbling will continue here, if it's status quo.
You think 18's not going to watch Diggs and say, whoa, I can do a lot of that. Mm-hmm. You think he's not going to?
Yeah.
Like, and I think that Thielen, to me, probably is a victim by this point of Stockholm Syndrome. So he's been in this offense so long that he's just brainwashed. He's
this
just
is like, wonderful. Yeah,
this is how it works. This is how it works. I mean, Patty Hurst and me. This works great. But if, you know, Jefferson's going to like watch Diggs here and see Diggs' comments. And I think he's going to be the type of guy probably, and he's not wrong, to say, hold on a second here. I'm productive, but how productive could I be if I was in an offense that works like what the Bills are doing?
Yeah. Well, you know, everything's great early on and the numbers he put up, but you also wonder, it's like, when you look around, like you said, you look around and you watch all these offenses and you see how wide open they are and just creative. And players know, they pay attention. They have friends on other teams and they talk in the off season. And so that's where I think that it's not going to be good enough for Zimmer and Kubiak just to say, let's just run it back. We're set. The system's good. What we're doing is right. Because you do wonder, like, I don't know where Dalvin is and touches the assume he's at the team record or close to
he's at 354. I'm not sure what the team record is, but it's 52 more touches at the same amount of games from this time last year for Dalvin.
Yeah. And so what's going to be the residual effect of that next year?
Oh, he'll play about 10 games. Guys just chip. History tells us
Yeah.
You don't come back and say, you know what, I'm going 16 games again or 15 games. No, I look at what McCaffrey did.
Yeah.
This year compared to last year. And the problem is it usually is a bunch of things, right? Like it's an ankle one week,
hamstring.
It's a ham. Exactly right. So I think that if you're the Vikings and you're projecting for 2021 and being realistic about those projections, I don't think that you can count on Cook to play more than like 12 games, like just as far as what history tells us.
Well, and that's where, like when they're dissecting the season, I think if they're being realistic about it, they said, forget about like projecting what, you know, how many injuries or whatever, because you can't, but just say the touches have to come significantly lower. I mean, we got to get Madison more involved. We have to get the passing game. You got to get Jefferson and Conklin and Irv Smith, and we need to have more balance there because he's just not going to make it to 5 years of that contract if you keep having 350, 370. So if I'm Dalvin, I wouldn't play him Sunday. And I think I told you this before, if I'm Dalvin, I said, I'll see you at training camp. I'm not coming to OTAs. I'm not coming to mini camps. I'll see you at training. I'll see you in July. I'm going to recover. I'm going to get my body back right and to the best of your ability. But yeah, that's the concern is like what is going to be the effect of this on him. And so.
Mm-hmm. Go for basketball.
Yeah.
Go for basketball. 2-1 in conference. Have you ever seen the Michigan State Spartans look like the Michigan State Spartans looked last night? I can't remember ever seeing an Izzo coach team look like that.
That looked that lethargic and get out rebounded by 16, I think it was. They're out rebounded 16.
Yeah, I got it. 52-26 and points in the paint favored
26?
52-26 in rebounds.
Oh my goodness.
Points in the paint, 40 for the Gophers, 16 for the Spartans. Well, that's the weakest Michigan State team, literally, that I've ever seen coached by that guy.
And I have to give Robbins credit. Yeah. I got to be on early on, you know, because Richard had pumped him up all offseason, and he's going to be one of the best big men, and just early on defensively, he looked a step slow. The game looked a lot fast. And this wasn't, I'm not even talking like Big Ten teams. I'm talking about non-conference, and I'm thinking this is not going to be good when they get in the Big Ten, and he's facing Coburn and Garza and these guys.
Luka Garza, I thought, would destroy
him. I did too. But Robbins has played well. Last night, he looked like a different kid. And, you know, I was not – even though they were undefeated in the non-conference, I wasn't impressed with them. It just felt like it was – Marcus Carr and everybody just standing around watching Marcus Carr do his thing. Yes. Booth Gotch had played well, but other than that, they weren't really getting a whole lot and they just didn't look good. Then obviously the Illinois game, you're thinking, okay, this team's going to go 0-10 to start the Big Ten now. And then that St. Louis game, which St. Louis is a good team. I don't know if you watched it. They're a good team.
I didn't watch a bit of it. No,
they're tough. They play hard. They look like an NCAA tournament team and like a team you wouldn't want to play in the NCAA tournament because they could win a game or two. And the Gophers won that. I'm like, you know what? They actually played pretty good there. I mean, that was a good team, a good win. And then the Iowa game, I thought they were done at the end. I was just like, well, they're going to lose a close game.
The first half, they were great.
Yeah, and then
the second, they came apart in some ways.
Half when Iowa got the lead and the Gophers just could not get a rebound. I mean, there were just so many offensive rebounds they gave up. And you're like, they're going to look back and think, you know, if we hadn't given up like 3 or 4 offensive putbacks and – had made a couple open shots. It's going to be one of those games where you're like, that was a winnable game. But they found a way to win, you know, and they kept at it. And then last night they were very impressive. I know it's not a classic Tom Izzo team, but they took it to them. And so this is what we thought this team might be, Judd. We said early on we thought this could be Pitino's one of his best teams, and they look pretty good right now.
Can I credit Pitino too? Because I thought the first half of – the Hawkeyes game. I thought that is as well as he's coached because Robbins got in foul trouble against Garza early, which he has done previously. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He found a way with different matchups. I think with basically smaller guys trying to surround Garza, I believe Garza in the first half of that game had 5 points. That to me was absolutely key. This team works hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's got talent. The one thing that I think has shifted a lot from what we saw in non-conference games to now, Chip, as well. It looked like in the non-conference games that Booth Gotch played a lot and played a huge role. That first Big Ten game, he scored one point. He was terrible.
Yeah.
And it was as if after that, they found a role for him that he fits, but they're not asking, I don't think, nearly as much from him as they did. I think they went in expecting that he was going to play a huge role. He still plays an important role, but it's definitely been dialed down in the Hawkeyes game for sure. And then I thought again last night, didn't you?
For sure. But I think he needs to be better, Judd. I still think you can get more from him and Gabe. Now, Gabe had that spurt where he hit a three and he had a drive to the basket. And I told my wife, I was like, if they get Gabe going, now this team really has a chance to be pretty good, because he would give them a totally different, dimension if he's hitting consistently outside. And then he went through and he missed another like four in a row after that. So it's just still not consistent. But he's really good defensively, and he does.
That's what I think is the most important thing. Yes.
Yeah, he's very good defensively.
He plays defense all the time.
He's still a positive, valuable player when he's not making shots. Now, if he can start making them, I think this team is different. I think Booth needs to give him a little more offensively. But you're seeing the depth now. I mean, this team could not have done this last year, Judd. No. Foul trouble would have just ruined.
They didn't have a bench.
Yeah. But you can bring Curry off, and you can bring in and off. Mashburn has given them good minutes. And so you feel like this team can win more than early on. Like, Judd, in non-conference, I felt like Marcus Carr had to be All-American for this team to win games, because it looked like he had to score 30 and just be great and carry off. I don't feel like that he has to be good. He can't just have an off game, but it doesn't feel like he has to score 33 points to beat a good team. I think they can get, and particularly a lot of that's because I think Robbins has come on.
Yeah. And I thought that he was going to be okay at best, right?
I thought he was going to be okay.
Last night shocked me.
Yeah.
Last night shocked me. He was really good. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this. If you're going to lose that first Big Ten game, the way that they lost it was probably the best way, because I think it embarrassed a lot of people and gave Pitino a ton of tape.
Sure.
So, like, instead of saying, yeah, we played a good team on the road and lost by three, they basically said, we played a good team on the road and you guys got your asses kicked.
Yeah, so you're undefeated, but that's not good enough.
And the other thing, too, that's fun is because of the transfers, Chip, this is a veteran team right now. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's not a bunch of kids who are, like, lost and they're, not developed yet. Basically, they've got a chance now with a veteran team to make waves and play well. And I think Pitino's style probably works better with this type of team, too.
Yeah.
If it's a bunch of kids, I think they get flustered and they're really not that big or developed yet. But this is basically a bunch of grown up men who came in now. And at least when Pitino gets on them, probably have a chance to develop and change things.
Yeah. And because they know the game and they know this college athletics. I'm still waiting for it. And I don't see if you think you have in it where Gabe gets hot and carries him to a win.
I don't know that's there now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, have those games where he makes like seven threes and just like, he's your best player. Like,
do you see it, Joe? I don't know. I see it.
I
freshman year,
I keep waiting for that to come. And it just,
the shot is so off. Like, it's there once and then he misses six.
Yeah.
And then it's there again. I don't know that he's got that 7 3-point shots made in a Big Ten game against a good team.
Until he doesn't, I say no, because it's been so dry for so long. It's just, but I do think, and maybe it's fool's gold waiting on it to happen, because when a slump lasts this long, it's more than a slump, right? But you look at his shot, and it's a pretty shot, like, mechanically, So it's like, you keep waiting for him to just get hot. And I think if he can, I think this team gives them a different dimension, for sure. But until it happens, I think you just have to count on him giving you defense and rebounding and just kind of solid play that way.
Last thing, Wolves. All right, Chipper. I was all prepared. Saturday night against a good Jazz team. You go in there and you play defense. And I mean, that was impressive. That was a really good win.
That's a really good win.
It's a legit team on the road that you go in and win. And now Cat's out. And
it's fun while it lasted, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I get Cat's out, okay? Yeah. But you lost by what? 36 and trailed at one point by 42 to the world champions. Lakers are really good again. Yeah. I get that. But my God, can you at least show up for that game?
Especially your veterans.
Yeah. Russell.
Yeah. I mean, what did Russell shoot? I mean, like.
Yeah, like 4 points.
Yeah. I know it's a back to back and you didn't have Cat, but. And everybody's expecting you to lose, but that was the air coming out of the bubble after the night when the night before you're thinking, man, this team might be actually decent.
They played a ton of defense too. The Jazz game defensively, Chip, they were fantastic.
Without a doubt. And Towns had like three blocks early on and they're defending and they're attacking on offense, and Anthony Edwards looks, just dynamite. But I do like their pieces, Judd. I will say this. I tweeted this out during the Denver game. I don't know how good they are. I'm sure they're going to have the ebbs and flows and all that, but they are more interesting now, and they are more entertaining because I feel like they have some actual talent. It's not just a bunch of guys out there playing.
Right.
Like, they actually have some legitimate talent. Now, whether they come together and can consistently be good defensively, we'll see over the long haul. But John, I've sat through that game, and I can't tell you last time at home when I wasn't covering it, but just at home, sat through an entire Timberwolves game. Because normally it's just like by third quarter, it's like, I've had enough. I can't watch this. But I said, from start to finish, I watched it. I was like, this is the first time in years that I've watched the game.
The Jazz game?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was great. Yes. Yeah. No, they have talent. I think they're compelling now. It's a sad thing to say, but the fact that they played defense was fun.
Yeah.
Like, how many Wolves games last year did they just sort of say, like, you know what, this defense thing, that, hold on a second, Ryan Saunders, this is a bit too much work that you've asked us to do. We'll shoot the threes, but we ain't playing defense.
Are you, like, when everybody's healthy and when with the Towns, when they're telling me he's going to be evaluated weekly, that's like, oh boy, that's not good.
Honest to God.
Do you buy into that this team would be better defensively?
With Cat playing, if Cat plays defense like he did on Saturday, yes, I do. Yeah, because one, I don't think it takes a lot. And two, at some point in time, look, Towns and Russell as players, I realize as human beings, they're young. But Chip, at some point in time as players, we've got to stop with this whole, well, I mean, hold on a second. They've been playing, young. I believe people going into like year 5 or 6 in the NBA.
This is okay.
You're not young. You're supposed to be in your winning window, not in the I'm still developing. Ain't this great? So yes, I do buy that it's time to get serious about trying to win games, and I do buy that they can and should play defense consistently. And here's my one question: can Ryan Saunders, throughout the course of an entire season, get that from them? Because he is the one who's going to have to not. He can't be their friend constantly. There's times he's going to have to push buttons and say, look, you two, I need you to do this. And if you embrace it or you like it, that's great. And if you don't, I don't care. You still have to do it.
Yeah. And I wrote about this, Judd, for the season opener that, ESPN has that they created that metric is called real plus minus. And I don't know what the factors are, but it's, they do it for offense and defense. For centers last year, 72 centers in the NBA, Cat was number one offensive real plus minus. Defensively, dead last.
Wow.
Dead last among centers. So if you're Gerson or Ryan, don't you sit Cat down as like, you're a wonderful player. Talent wise, you can do things that not many guys in this league can do. But look at this list right here.
Yep.
Defensive real time, you're last you were ranked last among centers in defense real plus minus. Yeah. Like, if you want to be viewed as an all-star, because I think there's a lot of factors why he felt, snubbed by not getting in the all-star game last year. But I'm sure, the word's out, like, he didn't play defense. He's the worst defensive center in the NBA by this metric.
Yep.
So if you want to make that connection and be like mentioned among the great players, you've got to be more representative as a defensive player. So maybe he took it to heart, maybe the light bulbs come on a little bit. I hope so, because it's
he gets hurt again. Well, like the guy has, I know, the poor guy has no luck.
I know, and
that's not his fault. He was playing hard.
He's playing hard and trying to make an aggressive move. But now it's like, how long is he going to be out? When you start saying he'll be evaluated weekly.
Yeah. And Naz Reid, God bless him, he tries hard and works hard, but you can't replace Cat with Naz Reid.
He's your cornerstone. It's disappointing.
And Russell's down now. I mean, and he's going to have to step up without Cat, which means that he's going to have to, and he's played what now, guys? He's played, I think D'Angelo and Cat have played something like three total games together.
Yeah, three or four.
One game last year, two games now, and he's out again. It's ridiculous. Do you, Chip Scoggins, have ant fever yet? Because this kid, I think, is going to be fun.
He looks fearless. And he looks confident, and I love his strength in his body just to be able to attack the glass. I mean, he will go at anyone, And so I think he's a confident player. I like his personality. He's like a kind of a free spirit type guy that's not in a shell or anything like that. So I think he has a chance to be pretty darn good. I mean, I think he has an NBA body and strength right now to be a big time scorer. I would the layman start, and I don't get that. I don't understand what that is at all. Do you? I mean,
No.
And I want to buy into Culver. I mean, he's better than he was.
The shot is way better.
It was just so bad last year, Judd. But then you see him this year, it's like, this guy's definitely improved.
He worked.
He worked hard on his game.
He worked his ass off, I think.
He deserves minutes. He deserves playing time, and yes. I think Edwards deserves.
And you know what he plays all the time? A ton of defense.
Yeah,
it's like Kalsher. It goes a long way with me if you do that, because there's a lot of guys who don't like to play defense.
It's just weird when you see a guy make that from year to year, that kind of improvement in a small sample size. Like, are we seeing the real thing that we're going to see for the rest of the year?
But he looks sample size. You kids today in your sample sizes.
He looks like a different guy, doesn't he?
Uh-huh.
And so I would like to see more of him and more of Edwards and probably less of Layman, to be honest with you.
Chipper, I thought of you last night. I saw John Morant's MRI came back negative. And I thought about your kid, and I was like, oh, I bet he's now he's doing okay. Yeah. If the MRI is coming back negative.
Well, I asked him this morning. I was like, what are you hearing? He's like, well, they just think it's a sprain. He'll be back these day to day. So he's already on top of it. He got two John Morant shirts for
Christmas.
John
came back in a wheelchair. They wheeled him out again. They wheeled him out. That's very disturbing. This league cannot afford the loss of guys like John Morant.
Well, do you see him? Like 44 points season opener?
Yeah.
Joe Scoggins. Joe Scoggins was going crazy in the household that day.
I love the fact that your kid doesn't care about teams. He only cares about players. This is so like
it's every kid, I know. Yeah.
I gotta watch a Cubs game. Now it's like, I just gotta watch Chris Bryant. I don't really care how the Cubs do. I gotta watch John Morant. I don't really care. The Grizzlies, who are they? I don't give a damn.
I know. He loves John Morant, man.
All right, Chip Scoggins. Thanks much. Great stuff.
All right, boys. Yeah, good to see you.
I heard from a couple of people who made that comment. It is that we talked about this yesterday a little bit, Judd. Kentucky way down, Duke down, yep. And now this Michigan State team is a different class of being down. When they lost to Northwestern, even though it was a brawl, you kind of got suspicious, right? There's something going on, and they're just not good, and this is not a good year to be bad in the Big Ten because there's a lot of good teams.
Yeah,
he might end up having that back surgery to try to get out to hand those losses to somebody else. Your assistant, I don't think he's that kind of guy.
Go the Coach K route. Those aren't my losses.
Time to have that surgery, Pete Godette. Go get them. Go get those. You know what they were that year in the ACC? 2-16.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, he just bailed out too. It was great. Poor assistant coach just got clobbered record wise.
It will be an interesting NCAA tournament this year, but you know, unless something happens with Kentucky, they won't be there. Duke will probably be there, but no Michigan State. They could finish 13th. They're terrible.
Yeah, they're
awesome. How about Maryland beating Wisconsin too? Wisconsin found out that's what Wisconsin gets for trying to play offense. You know, they should go back to 58-56, right?
Yes. So if the Gophers go into Wisconsin on Thursday and they win, I'll be truly impressed.
Yeah,
if they
will
beat Wisconsin there, I'll be really impressed.
Brody, even though you know, road games aren't like they used to be, but these are two straight. You know, beating Iowa, obviously much more impressive than beating this Michigan State team. But how long did Michigan State have 11? They were on 11 for like a week. It was
Pat, they couldn't make a shot. It was the damnedest thing.
Yeah. It's,
and the Gophers didn't play a great game. That's the thing about it. The Gophers did not play great. The Gophers played well. But, yeah, the Spartans could not make a damn shot.
Well, they weren't as good as they were against Iowa, for sure. They weren't making shots. And, you know, the kid Johnson, who won the game for him, was not knocking him down from all over. But, Patino, it's going to be an interesting world. I thought we talked about this again yesterday. Transfer basketball is the future. And he's right now, he's thriving on that. And it'll be interesting to see if this remains a go-to place for transfers, because the transfer pool is going to have 1,200 kids next year, you know, because you just get a free. You just get a free. Yeah, it's if I'm not playing as much as I want to someplace, I'm gone. I get one free one. And I don't even think you have to wait for NCAA approval anymore. I mean, it's automatic starting next year, right? And yes. It was automatic this year because of the pandemic. So,
yes,
football is going to be the same way. Football is going to be just chaos, man.
Yeah, I don't know if football players are going to be coming here left and right, but I think Patino's got an environment that's perfect. Veteran guys that see guys like Carr play a ton, they're like, hell, yeah, that's great.
How did he get out of here? How did he get out of there so quickly? He'll play 3 years here, right?
Who's that? Carr?
Carr will have played 3 years here. So he bailed on Pittsburgh after one season?
2 years ago, though, he didn't get approval to play. And so he was supposed to play 2 years ago. They turned him down. And so I think he plays 2 years here, but he's been in the program for 3 years.
That's why you can see why Pittsburgh wanted to keep him.
Hell yeah.
Considering they're playing in the ACC and their basketball glory days are long behind them there. They had that one little run of about 7 or 8 years where they played a lot of defense and won a lot of those ugly Big East games. But that game's kind of gone now.
Is Robbins good, do you think? This big kid, I thought he was terrible.
He looked terrible early. Nope. He's a presence, you know. He's 7 foot tall and standing in there, and he makes life miserable. And especially for Michigan State, which has always lived on the inside game. Now they don't. And, if you don't have a real good center, I would say that, you know, the guy from Illinois just pushed him out of the way and went in and scored. But he's not strong, but he's big. And he's gotten better, too. He's gotten better. He's adjusted to, you know, he's starting to adjust. I think when you come out of that, you know, the league he was in, it's a good enough league, Drake, the Mo Valley, but it's not this league. And it probably took him a little while to adjust to what that, you know, what was going on with him. So we'll see.
I guess he was a fat kid, too, at one point. Lost like 70 pounds.
Oh, is that right?
Well, yeah, they said a couple nights ago that he was a fat kid and like dropped like 75 pounds at one point.
I know he went to Drake. Is he an Iowa farm kid? I don't know where his background is.
From Iowa, yeah. Yes.
He is an Iowa farm kid. Well, yes. He's got that Iowa farm kid look about him. And if he was fat, that would have made even more sense. So anyway, yeah, they're the heroes of our town here. I'm trying to write a column here about the twin flops of football this year. I mean, we're letting these guys off the hook because of COVID and other things, right? We're not bashing them enough. And we certainly, the Vikings have gotten their share of bashing, but everybody wants to make excuses for the Gophers. I was trying to come up with a comparable, and I landed on 2010, right? 2009, yeah. 2009, you had Brett. You were going back to this once he came back. There were some signs in Mankato. We've talked about Sidney Rice, unhappiness, blah, 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 but Harbin being an idiot. But, you know, 2010, great optimism about the Vikings, but we weren't down on Coach Brew yet. They were 6-6 that year.
Okay.
2009, they sold out every home game. It was the first year in there. They beat Adam Weber, won a shootout with Kirk Cousins on Halloween night. That place was full, man. That was hopping that night. I was at that game. And they gave him a contract, but it was like they gave him an extension, but they didn't give much more money, and they didn't. And they lowered the buyout, actually. But they had that stinkeroo Insight Bowl, lost to Iowa State 14-13. But they also brought in Marquise Gray, and we had a spring game, and Marquise Gray was great over at St. Thomas because they were still building TCF Bank Stadium. And I went over and watched him, and he looked terrific. So we weren't done with, you know, there was thoughts that maybe they'll get a little better because 2 years earlier they'd been 6-1 and then won the tank. And, of course, he was firing. You know who was the offensive coordinator in 09? Jed Fish.
Jed Fish, yeah.
One and done. Yep. Jed Fish. Jed Fish, one and done.
Man.
So we were not, you know, I thought he was an idiot from the get-go, but the Gopher public was not. And, you know, one of them gets fired on October 17th and the other gets fired on November 2nd or something like that.
Yep.
So it's kind of my comparable year as far as, you know, okay, the Gophers were rated 19 in the country, you know, in the preseason rating. And, you know, I was looking back from some stuff the great man wrote before before his unfortunate passing away. And we got to forget, Gopher optimism was bubbling before this started.
Okay.
Yes, yes, it was.
I didn't remember that. No, okay.
It was, and then it all got delayed and screwed up. But, you know, here comes Michigan, look out. And Vikings, we thought they were a viable contender to Green Bay, didn't we?
In 2010?
This year. No, 2020.
This year, yeah.
This year, I'm talking about this year. No, yeah, this year the Gophers were rated 19.
Yeah.
And we were, you know,
I got that.
Hey.
Yeah, we thought they were, yes.
Yeah, we could win the West, maybe. Could win the West. And the Vikings were the only contender to Green Bay, right? The only team. And we thought the Vikings had, with seven teams going to the playoffs, they had a shot, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think we've demeaned these two teams enough for this flop.
Do you know what the most damning thing about the Gophers is? That they lost to Michigan.
Oh, God, yes. And Michigan got their arse kicked. And they got their rear end kicked. They got hammered.
Yep.
And then Maryland. And then giving up 600 yards to Maryland probably wasn't good either, even though they ended up going to overtime or they lost right at the end or something. But, you know, we had no idea that everybody said, blah, blah, blah. No, nobody knew how rotten this defense was going to be. Yeah, did they? Here's what's amazing about both teams. Dalvin Cook, you got the best running back in the NFL. Justin Jefferson, you know, should have the rookie of the year.
Yep.
You know, you got Webb Thielen had a great year again. You got weapons you don't know what to do with. The Gophers, Morgan Bateman, the best running back in the Big Ten. How did they both fall on their ass? I don't know. How did they both end up being embarrassments to the state of Minnesota?
Well, the Gophers couldn't play defense.
That's true. Well, neither could the Vikings.
Yeah, and Zim ultimately couldn't either.
Yeah, but it's I think that we need to give these two teams much more credit for being rotten this year than we have.
Pat, Zim did not take enough heat for that Saints loss, though. When he came out and said after the game on Christmas Day that I got to have my guys back, right? I need Barr and Kendricks, which is all fine. But did you look, the majority of the guys who started that game on Friday were Zimmer draft picks or guys that he had signed or helped sign. Those were his guys, his backups. Yeah. And you gave up 583 yards. He deserved way more heat, I thought, than he got for trying to walk that back and say, well, this team's terrible, but it's not my fault. These aren't my guys.
Well, the Zim tradition, now we won't have it this year because they're playing Detroit, but this was the season finale, right? New Orleans.
Yeah.
That was the last stand. That was the last stand, right?
Yes, I mean, the fork is in them.
Yeah. But each of his years, beyond the Seattle loss, when Blair Walsh misses the field goal, falling on their rear ends in the season finale, whether it's regular season or the playoffs, has become a Zim tradition. The last one, they stink. They don't, you know, they're not in some playoff game where they're fighting to the finish.
You're right.
They got to the NFC title game after a miracle and Philadelphia got humiliated. Last year, the score does not do justice to how bad they got drilled by San Francisco after they beat the Saints. And the Bears clunker there a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, when they had a chance to make the playoffs. So ending the year with a face dive has become a Zim tradition.
Hey, what are the Padres doing? And by extension of that, what the hell is going on? So Darvish is being traded to the Padres.
Yes.
The Rays basically, take Snell, who I think had something like 3 or 4 years of team control left, and trade him to the Padres. What the hell is going on here?
The Padres want to win, baby. They want to win.
Does anybody else like? Is it?
I don't know. Working? I don't know. The Padres have done a lot of stuff in the Latin America, signed guys, and they apparently are. They're unloading the farm system. They were doing so much work in Latin America that AJ Peller got suspended for cheating down there, right? For a while, and I don't know whoever the owner is. If the owner, by the way, is no longer the managing partner, is no longer that Fowler who's from Minnesota, who was the head of the group. Group. They brought in somebody else. Maybe he said, "I'm not doing this. Are you guys nuts?" but it's incredible. And
well, the Cubs are.
It's nice to know. San Diego's doing this to fire up a fan base that out in California probably won't be able to go to a game until July if we're lucky.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's weird.
But the Cubs are now dumping. The Cubs are taking a bath, I guess, and so they're trying to get salaries off the books. I mean, it sounds like now that they basically brought Theo in and said, hey, look, we don't want you to win now. So, and he said bye, and that saved them, what, $10 million? So the Cubs are basically panicked. I mean, this is just – it's nuts.
Well, Ricketts, I don't know, what's his – is he a billionaire or is he half a billionaire?
His problem his problem too is he bought all of that land around in the north side.
Thinking he developed it,
and no one's there.
Oh, okay. Nobody moved into those apartments and nobody moved into those expensive condos.
I'm just saying, as like far as the bars go and the restaurant and all of that and a hotel he built. And then they also launched that Marquee Sports Network, which I don't think is doing what they thought. And so he is really, really up against it. But I mean, still.
Well, the Marquee Network is – are they available at streaming services? If they're not, they're out of luck, right?
I don't know what you're complaining about. I mean, come on.
I don't know. Meanwhile, our fighting Wolfies tonight, I will not be watching them when they play the Clippers. What a battle this is. As we said yesterday, a team losing by 51 taking on a team losing by 36 right there in the Staples Center.
Yeah, it's a great matchup.
Do the Wolves stay out there and then flip around and play the Lakers again here? Or when do they come back?
They come back and they play the Wizards on Friday night here, and then Denver, I think, on like Sunday, and then they go to Denver and play the next game.
So they played
Utah and then went to Los Angeles and played the Lakers. Clippers,
when is our hockey team hitting the ice for practice?
What's it, Dex? The third?
The third, I believe.
And they play a regular season game on the 13th, right?
Correct. Yeah. It's just 10
no
days.
Exhibition, no exhibition. No exhibition.
We don't need that crowd.
Drop the puck, man. Do they open on the road then or here?
On the road. Four games in Cali.
Four games in California, and then they come home for six, I saw, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
What do we know about the media getting in there? They got the world's biggest press box. So.
Yeah, I think that the Professional Writers Association that does the hockey, I believe that they are hopeful that they'll let people into practice and into games, but I don't know what the number is going to be. Are they going to allow just the beat people in? Are they going to allow columnists in? I don't know.
I'm sure the association wants everyone in, but I'm sure the teams are going to come back and say no.
Well, I see we're going to make our basketball players and hockey players, youth hockey players, play with masks.
Yep.
And
yeah, how's that going to work out?
Yeah, well, I just read something that if a mask, that the official suggestion is that once your mask gets sweated up, you should change it. What are we, every shift, are we going to give one of these kids a new mask? I got like 100 of them laying around the house, but they're going to need 1,000 a night, right?
Do we think it's spreading though in sports?
We don't know.
I haven't heard much about it actually being spread during competition.
No, there hasn't been that much of it. No, I see why did they just find the Ravens just because they had an outbreak? What did they do? Just mad at them because they had an outbreak?
Oh, you know what? No, they traced the outbreak to a strength and conditioning guy who I think they said showed up with symptoms and didn't wear a mask. And that's probably why they fined him. And my guess is that strength and conditioning guy might have lost.
The NFL is trying to make it seem that they have the perfect system as long as everybody follows every rule, which is bull crap. They're letting their players go to a grocery store, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can go home and live your life, right?
Yes.
And this idea that the only way it can happen is if somebody breaks protocol is nonsense.
The thing I don't get is they actually discussed, or it was broached about, a bubble for the playoffs, and they turned it down flat.
Yeah.
Which to me made a ton of sense. Like, once you get to the playoffs, isolate the players if that's what you want, right?
Well, I see we got an issue with we might not get one played this weekend, right?
Do we have another one? Cleveland had one last week against the Jets, but they just
played. No, but we have a wide receiver. Something today. Didn't somebody get pushed back or anything?
Oh, yet? I haven't looked today. I don't know. Hey, last thing. Hall of Famers 2020. Nuxie died now. Seven of them, Pat. We've lost seven of them.
And Dick Allen, which is, as prominent of a guy. Yeah, the Star Tribune and the Ripper did a back page today, if you want to see it, the print edition of all the Minnesotans and other sports people that have been lost. And there's no chance we have them all. As you know, anytime there's a list, you start. That's the reason I hate doing lists, because you miss something. And I'm sure we will get many notifications of, a prominent coach someplace in Minnesota who died. But it's a pretty shocking list when you look at it, and baseball has just been ravaged, man. But
especially my Cardinals,
Gibby and Brock in the same year, man, unbelievable. Yeah.
And Nuxie, man, he looked 85 in his last year pitching for the Yankees.
Everybody loved Nuxie. I guess I didn't know him at all. I never dealt with him, but they said he was a character. Everybody loved him. He was just, the quote today was, he didn't throw a fastball. He didn't throw a slider. He didn't throw a changeup. He was the one guy who didn't try to sneak a fastball past you, like most of them do. He just threw knuckleballs. That's all. He just threw nothing but knuckleballs. And I heard yesterday R.A. Dickey doing an interview on him. And Negro basically taught him.
Did he? Okay.
Negro just said, here, do this. And you can't pitch. You can't get anybody out. Here, throw this. Who we got left? Who's throwing it?
Is it the Red Sox guy? Is the Red Sox guy still there? Is it Wright or –
He was on the IL, I think, all last year.
They had a guy that I don't think. White Sox had a guy, but I don't know if he's still around.
But guys now sort of throw it a little bit harder. Phil had the one that was just the classic old fluttering knuckleball.
Well, the Mighty Whiteys, I think they had three at one time. They had Wood, they had Eddie Fisher. They had Wilhelm and Eddie Fisher at the same time.
Yeah.
And then when Wilbur was there, I think they had another one too. They've had, the White Sox traditionally have had more than any. Have we ever really had one? Negro, Joe Negro, but
Joe threw the harder version.
He didn't pitch that much.
And Dickey didn't have it when he was here, right?
No, Dickey was, I think, he was throwing it, but I guess he was here and didn't. Yeah, back in the, it used to knock the hell out of the knuckleballers, Harmon.
Really? Patient?
He had that quick wrist. He could wait for that last hop, He could wait for that hop. He had some gigantic home runs off Eddie Fisher.
Catching those guys had to be an absolute nightmare.
Well, they went out there with that, they went out there with that triple-sized one. And I was in the dome. In the Superdome with the Twins when Joe Negro was throwing it a lot. The Twins were down there for the first. Wasn't Joe Negro? Had to be. It wasn't Phil Negro. It was a knuckleball.
Joe was here in 87, right?
Yeah, okay. So the Twins, this was earlier. The Twins were in the Superdome.
Oh, when they played New Orleans. Okay, yeah.
New Orleans. So it had to be like 78. It must have been Joe, though. And Cliff Johnson was the catcher. And the Twins scored, I think, 5 runs in the first inning with 6 strikeouts. And Cliff was not chasing him after a while. He just walked back to the backstop and pick him up. Cliff wouldn't chase him.
Hey, Pat, I saw a picture a few weeks back of the Superdome set up for baseball back then.
Yeah.
And you were right. The backstop is nowhere near anything.
No.
So if that thing got by Cliff, that thing was going to roll.
Cliff just walked back there, basically said bleep, and half the time the bat boy.
Whoops, I think we lost.
Oh, there we go. There he's back. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm getting a call here, boys.
Okay.
All right, Pat.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Talk to you later. All right,
bye. Bye, Pat.
See
you. Royce, he dumped us.
He did. I was about to say, I was about to bring up one of my earliest Metrodome memories is Tim Wakefield, absolutely, and who I think made a killing against the Twins in his career. Yeah. I remember going to that with my dad and my uncle and my brother, and Wakefield went like 8 innings, 3 hits, struck out 10 on that flutter knuckleball.
The knuckleball looks it's so seductive because it looks like a pitch that as a kid you'd go home and be like, oh, this is simple.
I can
just
do
throw
it.
The fluttering knuckleball, right? It's I don't know how you do it.
Wakefield was a failed hitting prospect that turned into a pitcher. So Wakefield wasn't drafted to be he was with the Pirates.
Yes.
And then he flamed out and got hurt or something and then developed into a knuckleball pitcher. It's actually a remarkable story.
Yeah. All right, sir. We are done. We'll be back on Wednesday, Doogie, for an extended scoop. We'll talk some Wolves then and another dose of Rapping with Royce. Talk to you later.